Forget the pressure to overhaul your life. The new year doesn't need a new you. It needs you. Grounded, supported, and ready to grow. Grow Therapy helps you make meaningful change at your pace and on your time. Whether it's your first time in therapy or your 50th, Grow makes it easier to find a therapist who fits you, not the other way around. They connect you with thousands of independent, licensed therapists across the U.S., offering both virtual and in-person sessions, nights, and weekends. You can search by what matters, like insurance, specialty, identity, or availability, to get started in as little as 2 days. And if something comes up, you can cancel up to 24 hours in advance at no cost. There are no subscriptions and no long-term commitments. You just pay per session. Grow helps you find therapy on your time. Whatever challenges you're facing, Grow Therapy is here to help. Grow accepts over 100 insurance plans, including Medicaid, in some states. Sessions average about $21 with insurance, and some pay as little as $0, depending on their plan. Visit growtherapy.com/get started today to get started. That's growtherapy.com/get started. growtherapy.com/get started. Availability and coverage vary by state and insurance plan.
I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
The Market Musings Podcast with Fairbairn and Russell.
Welcome to the Market Musings podcast, where today we're having our guest George Roach from Premier African Minerals. Now, George, we did speak on the Market Musings podcast before. It was about 18 months ago, I think, but it's good to have you back on. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm fine, thank you. And always good to sit and chat to you guys. So thank you very much indeed.
So unfortunately, our usual co-host, Kenny, is having connection issues in deepest, darkest Scotland. So it's just going to be me and you today, George, on the podcast. But, you know, that's okay. So we won't talk about your background because we've, of course, covered that in the previous podcast. But I think it'd be nice today to have more of a laid-back discussion or a longer-form discussion on the company's flagship project, of course, that is the Zulu Lithium project. And you've just had some news today, haven't you? But before we get into that, maybe we can just sort of start talking around the history of the project, particularly with relation to Premier, because it's been one of your projects for many, many years, hasn't it?
Oh, indeed it has. You know, I was sort of mulling over in my mind just the other day that it's 2008, I believe, when I first registered a company at the time called GNB African Resources, which subsequently became Premier. And one of our very early projects that we became involved in was the Zulu Lithium and tantalum claims sitting at the Fort Rickson area. That was before we listed that we had this involvement. We were working with various other parties in Zimbabwe and some fairly interesting names as well who, I mean, in one instance, went on to be part of the recently announced deal on the Arcadia project. Was still one of those that we had some conversations with way back in the sort of 2010, 2011, 2012 eras. So it goes back quite a long time. You know, we always felt that it was a very good project. There'd been some good preliminary work done by Rhodesian Selection Trust, RST, going back in time. We obviously didn't have core or anything like that from the five odd holes they drilled, but they were pretty thorough. And, you know, and at that time that they were doing exploration, people were still doing hand-drawn maps, and some of their trenching and some of their sampling, some of the work was done to a very, very high standard. So it made life pretty easy in realizing that this could be a project with a very good future. So yeah, some good roots it came from, let's put it that way.
And you've had ownership of it for how long?
It must be now 12 odd years.
12 years. Okay.
12, 13 years, yeah.
Okay.
You know, you kind of tend to go through these cycles with these things, and so many cost factors, commodity prices, demand and supply, and this and that, and all the rest of it, have an influence and exert an influence over the life of an exploration and eventually development. And Zulu's been no different to so many others in regard to that side of it.
And then before you took over it, or Premier took over the project, had it had a lot of exploration on? So I'm thinking you've had it 12 years, so that would have been through the last kind of mining commodities boom that was around sort of 2010, 2011. So has it, what about prior to that? I mean, how long has activity been going on the project for?
Well, prior to that, the only serious activity was the activity from RST that I mentioned just now. And that predated our acquisition of it by a long way. I can't remember the dates, but that must go back to the 60s, 50s, 60s, something like that. And then really nothing. So it was known, you know, for whatever it's worth, for the better or worse of some of the colonials, some of the things they did do was to do some decent early exploration. So it was pretty well identified, but as I say, nothing had really happened from RST's time up until sometime after we acquired the project. And we, in the early days of Prem, we did do some additional drilling. The drilling was positive, but cycles and times and so on, I tend to mitigate against the spend that one's able to commit on that kind of project today. The ability to put in the amount of money that is going into hard rock spodumene projects today just didn't exist in 2011, 12, 13, 14, that sort of time. It just wasn't there. You know, so As I say, the cyclical nature of these things tends to have quite an impact on how one progresses and when one progresses projects.
Yes, indeed. And when it comes to lithium, then, which is of course the commodity that is at Zulu, was there ever a real demand for lithium in the past, or is it really being seen a lot more now, given of course where it's used in batteries?
Look, the use and the requirements has changed dramatically. You know, Zimbabwe, going way back in time through Bakita, I think it was, did produce significant. It was one of the only really significant producers of petalite, world producer for many years. They did produce some lithium. They did have some processing, but not a hell of a lot. And the main requirement really for spodumene was into the ceramics industry, the glass industry in particular, and petalite into ceramics, but there in things like some of the ovenware type dishes, Corningware type stuff that you can't really make without a very low iron petalite. So it was regarded very much as an industrial mineral, and that was largely where the demand and where the market was. And you know, we've just seen over the last probably four, five, 6 years now, a slow change and then a very rapid change, and now a monumental change in the requirement and the demand for it. And I don't think it's an industrial mineral any longer. I think it's changing completely.
Okay. It's certainly going to be part of everyone's life. The era for the battery, the humble battery, is on its way. I think that the next decade will be kind of defined a lot. I mean, we talk about cyclical cycles in mining and commodity space, and of course the word supercycle as well. I'm not sure if I don't know if a mining commodities whole sector supercycle will come, but certainly something driven by the battery metals and the green economy, the green energy space, and the flexible grid solutions, all that kind of thing that's coming in there. We could certainly see, I think, if not a mining supercycle, something certainly in that space that might lead into a longer term supercycle. I don't know what your thoughts are on that kind of thing, George. I know you've been in the game a while. You've seen a cycle or two, I imagine.
Yeah, you know, I have. They're like a lift. What goes up comes down eventually. You know, it's got to go up first.
Yeah, the answer to low prices is low prices, isn't it?
Yeah. Look, I think that we're in for a reasonable period of expanding demand and fairly high demand in these metals that are associated with batteries. Technology will drive some changes. There'll be variations in the use of this or that. We don't know what's going to come out of developments in the future, but I think that we can be reasonably comfortable that where we are at the moment is going to see a fairly sustained demand for lithium for use in batteries. Where prices will settle, I don't know. I can't see that we'll be looking at the kind of prices on spodumene and petalite concentrates that we were looking at the time that we started looking at Zulu. I don't think we're ever going back to anywhere near that again. Where will they settle? I don't know. I'd love to think they're going to stay where they are for the next several years. I don't know that they will, and I don't know that it would be right necessarily for any of us to forecast future revenue based on $4,000 or $5,000 or $6,000 a ton for spodumene. I hate giving forecasts, but certainly I think in the region of $1,500 to $2,500. Possibly a bit higher. I don't think that there's anything wrong with that kind of region. And, you know, that makes mines like Zulu and a few others very, very attractive propositions. Mm-hmm. So time will come. Time will tell, you know, just where is it going to go up to and settle? Where's that final number going to be? One of the challenges we obviously have to face as we go forward and look to fund this and build it.
Indeed. And when you took this project on then, as you said 12 years ago, was the goal always to advance this towards being an operational mine? And did you anticipate it, you know, 12 years later, still not quite being there, but certainly getting closer? Did you anticipate it would take this long?
No, I didn't, but having said that, I had no particular anticipation that anything would go through much less than a normal anything up to 8 to 12 year kind of period to go through full blown exploration and assessment and study and so on and so forth, and eventually going to mine both. And I mean, you know, there are a lot of others that take a hell of a lot longer than that. So there's no issue that this industry is long term, high risk, capital intensive. It's all of those things, and you know, I suppose that's what at the end of the day should support the ability to turn some mines into very profitable and long-term money earners. I think that I'd like to think that that's where Zulu is going to go. The work that we've been doing and engaging the independent GOs that we have indicates to us that we can understand the geological model today much better than was the case before. And pegmatites tend to be all over the place anyway, and they're not always that easy. They're often multi-phased. You have variable mineralization through them. You have different sequences that occur and so on. So understanding the ore body is often quite a challenge. And I think that we're through that. Mm-hmm. And once you're through that, then every borehole that you put in, every result you get, every core that you log becomes something that you add into that existing structure, and it starts to unravel all the mysteries of this thing that's sitting a couple of 100 meters or 100 meters underneath your feet that you can't see, but you've got to work it out. Otherwise, you can't assess how you're going to mine it, when are you going to make, and so on.
And how long does it normally take? You said, 8 to 12 years, is that about the right sort of length of time to take a project from, well, grassroots, greenfield, to building a mine?
Yeah, I would say so. And sometimes longer, you know, with some of the really big ones. You know, I'm just trying to think of other examples. I mean, another example of this. The other thing is, you don't know what's going to happen along the way. You do have other political influences that come to bear, other socioeconomic demands that come to bear, all sorts of things that can happen. I mean, a very good example of this is if you go to Mozambique today, which is not in Zim, but if you look at Mozambique and you look at the huge movement of people, the internally displaced people, IDPs all over the place, and the effect that has. So you might think you've got a nice piece of barren land along the coast that you can go, and I'm thinking of the Chinese and the Russians now in Mozambique, that you don't have any inhabitants on, and you can go and extract your heavy sands. And the next thing, you've got a couple of 100,000 people with nowhere to live, right? You're moving in and living on the coast and living on top of where you thought you were going to mine. So there are so many other extraneous factors that happen along the way. And you can plan and try and forecast and so on as many of them as you can. Not always possible to deal with all of it.
Yeah, an awful lot can happen over that period. And of course, as well as all those sort of factors on the ground, at government level, there's also the cycles as well, isn't there? You know, if you almost want to be, I guess, starting out in the depths of despair in the cycle, because then by the time, if you're able to take the project all the way, by the time you are getting around to sort of actually building a mine, then you want to time it ideally that the sector is in your favour. Otherwise, perhaps all that work is you just won't be able to actually make it profitable.
Yeah, and you know, and that of course then leads into how and when and where do you fund what you're doing? Because to try and fund through the depths of a depressive cycle can be expensive.
Yeah.
So you know, you have all of these factors that come into it, and you know, I think that if we sort of look at that, just sort of touching briefly, you will have seen that. We had an RNS out earlier today, dealing with funding. I mean, it puts Premier into a wonderful position where, if you think about it, our forecast DFS cost was originally $5.3 million. The funding that we brought into the company was a gross £12 million. We're already a little way into the DFS, so. Are we completely funded through the rest of this DFS process and for ongoing company operations and so on and so forth? And the answer to that's clearly got to be a yes. I think that in many ways we're in a very good position at the moment. It's just a case of working our way through that additional data collection that allows us to properly describe the pit that's going to be mined, to elevate resources from inferred into indicated level, to have sufficient of it to describe an adequate life of mine, to get all the test work done that relates to the mineral assemblage and how best to recover it, what the end product mixes are going to be, and so on. And there's a huge amount of study, of work, of assessment, of questioning, of analysis, and so on, that goes into it, that is often, it's kind of lost when one tends to have a bit of a limited focus sometimes on when's the next assay result coming. And there's so much more than just that. So in some ways, putting us in a position where we're better funded kind of also lets us align our focus, I think, more into the things that really are driving the DFS and the future value of the company, and into those medium-term issues that have to be dealt with, so we can sit down and say, there's a study that we can defend. Let's mine built and let's get into production.
Yeah, and of course the funding there for this DFS is it's with a partner, isn't it, who clearly like very much what they're seeing.
But it's a placement at a price that is the better part of it. The time it was announced, was more than a 30% premium to the share trading price. So, we have a very substantial partner who sat down and looked at us and said, guys, we're comfortable that even after you've issued these additional shares to us, that's where the value of this thing is going to be. And this is where the market's going. So, have they taken a strong view on us? I think the answer to that is self-evident.
Yes, I think it is self-evident. Yeah. I mean, it's a significant amount of money, and it funds the whole of the DFS, doesn't it? And beyond?
Yeah, and beyond. I mean, it's through DFS. It's, and then the other thing, of course, that we've agreed with this party is that we'll negotiate exclusively during the next 6 months in terms of how we're going to develop this project into the mine that we believe it should be. And this partner already has demonstrated elsewhere that their prime concern is access to spodumene, and they have the ability to provide financing on terms that really are a negotiation. I'd like to think that we should be able ultimately to hugely debt fund the building of a mine that's going to produce a concentrate. That's what's in my mind. That's what the target is, in exactly the same way as my intention has been to try and retain 100% ownership of Zulu, and at the same time look for funding from an industry partner with expertise that they can add to us, and at a premium to where we were trading. So we've managed that, contrary to a lot of the expectations, I have to say with a smile, but we did it. Who's to say we're not going to do the same when it comes to debt to build this thing? It's the future. I can't predict that. I can only try and plan and do what I can to achieve it.
Yes, indeed. I always find it interesting whenever a company announces a placing, the share price always falls to that price, because often it's lower than the price on the day. But interestingly, when you've announced significant funding at a price that's a premium to the share price on the day, what happens? It still falls. So it's you can't win in this game at the moment. But it will turn. I'm sure of that. It's just when. But as I said at the start, the kind of mining commodities super cycle driven by battery metals. It's got to happen at some point, and fair value should be seen.
Yeah, I have to say on that one, it's hands up. I have no understanding of. I thought there were some fundamentals around. I really did.
Yeah.
But there are a few new ones that I think some of the guys on the billboards seem to invent on a periodic basis.
Mm-hmm.
So I really don't know.
But in general, it's good progress, isn't it, George? You know, you've had this 12 years. I think it's very unusual for a company to actually take a project all the way, which it looks like you have full intentions to do.
Well, the answer to that is yes. And yes, you're right. It is unusual for a company to do that. I didn't necessarily, when I started the company, I have a specific objective of looking to dispose of it and or take it all the way. I didn't have a conclusive idea on that. What I knew and what I think I knew then and what I think I know today is that you can only sell something if you want to is demonstrably worth what somebody is going to pay for it and is a project that will or should come into production. So I always viewed with whatever Prem had projects from the point of view of could this thing become a mine? And I know a very small percentage of projects become a mine. In fact, if you listen to the Canadians, for example, I think that one of their mines ministries at some time published something that kind of indicated that it was like a couple of anomalies in 1,000 that would ever really progress to a significant exploration, and probably only a percentage of that where intrusive exploration was done that would ever become a mine. So it's a pretty long shot, and you have to be very careful in assessing the deposit, trying to go through the motions properly. And I think that's where we are with Zulu, that, mm-hmm. as I said earlier, we understand the geology today, which was not always the case. The effect of that is that each borehole, as I said, each core log and so on is meaningful, et cetera, et cetera. So, I mean, kind of where it is. So will that value in this be demonstrated, going back to value and the effect on the share price, mm-hmm. when you make a good announcement? Maybe I should make a bad announcement and see what happens. I don't know.
Yeah, well, you don't know, do you? Yeah, you
don't really know. Don't know.
No, it's an interesting one. But, I mean, surely the DFS is a big moment in any mining explorer's lifetime. Just from my private investing since, 2013-ish, of course, the DFS is a big one. That's when we can really start to see some tangible numbers, isn't it, and value on, and of course, the feasibility. It is a definitive feasibility study. So you really start to get something really concrete there, that you can really say yes with confidence, this is going to be profitable, and it looks like it's going. It's got some legs. So, I mean, that's obviously due later on this year, isn't it? That's the plan.
Oh, that is definitely the plan. It's worth just reflecting on the scoping study that was done. When we looked at it and ran various analyses on it, there were no red flags that we saw in that scoping study. We needed to get more of the resource elevated to an indicated level at least. And that's obviously the purpose of the drilling and the this and the that and everything that's going on at the moment. Because that's really goes to the heart of your mining cost, your your pit development, your strip ratios, your this, that, and all the rest of it. But other than that, as I say, the scoping study saw no red flags, predicted some decent profitability.
Mm-hmm.
We're seeing generally the same kind of detail emerging as we go forward. Same kinds of results, and we're getting early results on test work coming in. I mean, for example, just on basic gang from ore sorting test work that's being done, and that kind of thing. We're going through all of those motions at the same time, and at the moment, we're not seeing anything that says to us, your confidence is misplaced. I mean, if there was, I'd have to tell everybody, but at the moment there is.
Yeah. And beyond the DFS, then you would then move into it's a BFS, isn't it? And then towards, well, I guess developing a mine. Is that right?
You know, that's something that we'll have to discuss carefully with our new investors.
Okay.
I have a feeling that we may be in a position to get to an earlier decision if we are prepared to look at accepting certain risks to a level that might be higher than one would normally want to look at. And I talk about risks like costing on final plant and equipment items, long lead plant and equipment items that you haven't quite got to the 5-10 kind of range, percent range that you'd like to get to, but you've got a bit of a bigger window that you need to allow for. And if we're at a point where those are the only risks that we're concerned with, we would then have a very serious discussion about whether or not we look, because of the pricing of spodumene, to commence part of construction earlier.
Okay.
So I'm not sure. That's something for down the line. I think that's down the line a little bit later this year, and we'll be able to revisit that.
And just on that, I know we're not discussing that as fact at the moment, but What is it like in terms of the jurisdiction and the local planning permission? I imagine it's fairly easier to do it in Zimbabwe than it would be to do in perhaps a Western country.
Yeah, I would say so. In fact, I'd say that's a bit of an understatement. You know, the tenure in Zimbabwe is, I think, is very good. We hold the original deposit area for Zulu under mining claims.
Mm-hmm.
And the mining claims generally give you assured tenure almost in perpetuity, as long as you're doing work and or paying money. Now, I mean, at the moment, we're doing a lot of work and that more than supports the minimum requirements from the mines department. So that's on that, and it's a mining claim. It's not an exploration claim. It's specifically referred to as a mining claim, and the doing work intends to imply go mine as opposed to go explore. That doesn't alleviate one of a lot of the other requirements that go with mining. And obviously, top of the list of that is your environmental concerns and issues.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to the plant, there will be some additional concerns because of some of the media that's used for flotation, for example. You're obviously concerned with water management. You're concerned with your tailings facilities, recycling, and so on and so forth. The general environment, the communities around you, of which we don't have many, and our relationship with the communities is pretty good at the moment. We tend to go out of our way to keep contact and be part of the communities. So, no, it's not I don't foresee any particular issues.
Mm-hmm.
when it comes to that aspect of it, mm-hmm. Much less so than I would anticipate in various other countries that I won't name for the moment. Mm. But anyway,
indeed. And given the funding that you have now, which is you say will see you certainly, definitely for the DFS, will you be using some of that funding to conduct other works in parallel with the DFS at the same time?
You know, nominal perhaps, but more focused within the EPO area, because as I was saying just now, we have claims, but those claims all sit within an exclusive prospecting order area as well. So there is some additional work that's being done in the surrounding part of Zulu. The ore body appears to extend and appears to be quite comprehensive in terms of how it extends and how far it extends. So there's a fair amount of work to be done there. We also have some other lithium claims and claim properties in Zimbabwe that are remote from Zulu, and there will be more work done on those. I think that those are important and significant. So it's not that we will only be concerned with Zulu, but the biggest issue for us right now is that Zulu is and will remain fully funded, as will PREM. Mm-hmm. We will go all the way through with this. Funds will be earmarked such that we will complete whatever it is we need to do at Zulu, and for that matter, accelerate if we can some of what we've been doing. So we've already upped, I said originally 5.3 million. I've upped that to some extent. I want to try and accelerate if I can. I want to try and add more value into different areas. Mm-hmm. You know, when we first estimated the DFS cost, we kept this thing to an absolute minimum. I think some of that will change. There's further and additional test work we could do that we may add into it that could add value and could add profit at the end. So those opportunities are there as well, thanks to this investment that we have.
Okay, excellent. Okay, and just I wonder if there's a few words maybe you can say about your new partner here and how much involvement they will have day to day. I understand that Dr. Lu Wei, hopefully I've said his name correctly, you can probably pronounce it better for me. Yes. He will be joining the board.
Yes, mm-hmm. I'm quite excited about that. You know, Dr. Lu's CV, he's a geologist, but mm-hmm. his CV in terms of pegmatite exploration and detection is exemplary. And he fronts his company in regard to this all over the world. So he is doing a lot of traveling in Africa, not just where we are. He's all over Africa at the moment, looking for as many of these spodumene opportunities as the company can find.
Okay.
Our new shareholder is a major 75% of one of the biggest lithium hydroxide producers in China. They have huge plans on expanding, and their requirement to find consistent supply of spodumene concentrate is huge. So Dr. Lu fits absolutely into that. That's the one aspect of it. And the other aspect of it is that I'm hoping, and you know, remember, this is only kind of closing now, I'm hoping that he will be able to spend more time with our technical teams, particularly when it comes to aspects of the plant design and the flow sheet. So I'm looking forward to that part of it as well. I'm comfortable. He clearly has the knowledge that is needed, and any technical expertise is always welcome.
Excellent. Okay. Well, thank you very much, George, for giving us your time on this podcast to really just focus in on Zulu, get a good understanding of where it's come from, its history, and the state it's at now, and hopefully where it's going. So I'm sure we can, we'll be talking again on various interviews, I'm sure, as RNSs are released. But maybe the end of this year, we can have you back on this podcast to perhaps discuss the DFS. And any other exciting news that's come from Prem. So thank you very much for your time, George. Unless there's anything else you sort of wanted to go over, I think we're good.
That's fine for me. I mean, you know, I'll talk all night if you like.
You might talk all night, but I can't guarantee people will listen all night. That's the only problem.
Yeah, I was going to say, you've probably had enough of that. Okay. No, thanks very much.
Thank you very much, George. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Yes. Bye.
Thank you for listening to another podcast from Market Musings with Fairbairn and Russell. Tune in next time.
What does VA mean to me?
A place for my daughter to call home, thanks to the VA Home Loan.
A new lease on life. The best healthcare team I've ever had is here at VA.
And education, and the opportunity to open doors I never thought possible with my GI Bill.
The financial support I need to manage the disabilities I developed because of my service.
Get what you earn. Visit choose.va.gov.
Not all veterans are eligible for the type or amount of benefits mentioned here.